A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on January 5, 1992, in the series God With Us, entitled In the Other for Whom Our Heart Longs. The scripture readings are Genesis 2, verse 18 and 21 through 25, 1 John 4, verses 7 through 12, and Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Epiphany, a word which means manifestation, a word which denotes the truth of our Christian faith, that God has not remained hidden, but God has shown God's self to us. God is a God who is revealed. God is a God who has manifested God's self to the world. And the gospel lesson celebrates the star and the visit of the Magi, the sign that now God's grace, God's light and truth, would break the bounds of that narrow line of the Old Testament of Israel and Judah, and would become light to the nations, so that all of the Gentiles, all peoples, might come to the knowledge of God and experience God's grace. Although we have moved and are moving now into our third season in quick succession, I have maintained a common theme: God with us. Seeking to stress the importance in our present experience of the experience of God, so that we do not have simply a doctrinal system to which we assent, or a form of worship in which we engage, but that in our daily, mundane, human experience, we have the touch of the holy. We have the experience, tangibly and concretely, of the God who is with us. God with us, the translation of the name Emmanuel, the name given to a child in ancient Israel as a sign to a king who refused to believe, but a sign to a king that God would be with God's people. Even in historical crisis time, God would not abandon God's people. God with us. So that when Matthew reflected on the life of Jesus after his death and resurrection, post-Pentecost, when he wrote his gospel, he said, this Jesus, this one was Emmanuel. In this one, we have known the presence of God in a powerful way never before experienced. God with us. Jesus, Emmanuel. John's way of stating that was, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And in this letter of John, from which I read a lesson a moment ago, the letter opens in what could be characterized as perhaps the finest statement of epiphany that we could put our finger on. Notice the concrete reality, the tangibility of that of which John writes. It was there from the beginning. We have heard it. We have seen it with our own eyes. We looked upon it and felt it with our own hands. And it is of this we tell. Our theme is the word of life. This life was made visible. We have seen it and bear our testimony. We here declare to you the eternal life which dwelt with the Father and was made visible to us. That is Epiphany. The Word that became flesh, that could be listened to, looked upon, actually, literally handled. That's how real God with us became in the humanness of Jesus. But you know, we live 2,000 years later. There's a little children's song, "Oh, how I wish I had been with them then," you know, when Jesus took little ones and put them on his knee and so forth. "Oh, how I wish I had been with them then." And there is that tendency in all of us, I think, to think, "Oh, if I had only been back there then, if I could have been there firsthand." What about us 2,000 years later? Do we have to simply intellectually believe in a second-hand experience 2,000 years old? Or is it possible that even for us today, we can concretely and tangibly have the experience of God? Is that not what we long for? Well, I'm going to suggest on this Epiphany Sunday celebration that it is possible tangibly and concretely to experience God. I'm going to suggest that we focus today not on the star or the visiting magi, as majestic as they were a moment ago. I'm going to suggest today that our experience of God is in the encounter with the one for whom the heart longs. That God is still experienced in human flesh. That the tangibility and the concreteness of the experience of God is in our experience of the other, of the neighbor. There is that human encounter which becomes the place of the holy, and in the relationship one person to another in love, God is to be found. I suppose that that's a little startling at first thought, because we tend to make God so far away and spiritual existence so unrelated to the everyday mundaneness of human existence. And we live so often such barren lives, really so secular, knowing how to go about our business and how to keep our homes and struggling to raise our families. And we go through all of the human experiences, but it is so often so divorced from the presence and the reality of God. And I think that just may be because we fail to recognize that God is as close as the one next to us. That God indeed continues to be incarnate in the other for whom our heart longs. I read the Genesis story this morning, the older account of creation. And there, I think, in that story, what we have revealed is the recognition that the human person was created for relationship. In this delightful story, we have the Creator observing the man and saying, as a matter of fact, after some observation, "You know, it's really not good that the human person should dwell alone." And so we have We have old Adam put under an anesthetic and a little incision made in the side and a rib released and a woman created. And then that marvelous moment when the Creator says to Adam, "There she is." And Adam says, "Oh boy." And that deficiency in that first creative act is more than made up for as the man looks upon the woman and the woman upon the man, and suddenly that incompleteness that even God recognized is fulfilled in the relationship with the other. Understandably, the story points to the marriage relationship of the husband and the wife, but I think that in that story there is a pointing to something even more profound, and that is the fundamental, intrinsic incompleteness of a person alone. And that aloneness and that incompleteness only to be fulfilled in the encounter, in the relationship of love with the other. It is not good that a human person live in isolation, insulated from the relationship that becomes the place in which God is experienced. I came across a book a year or so ago which very, very, very interesting. It's called The Intimate Connection by James Nelson. And the thing that caught my eye, or I was doing some work in a doctoral program for somebody, and the thing that caught my eye in this book was the subtitle, Male Sexuality and Masculine Spirituality. And I thought, my goodness, what have those two things got to do with each other? I mean, I was raised in this kind of restrictive, repressive Dutch Calvinist home where I sort of got the impression that to the extent that I could deny my sexuality, I might develop my spirituality. And now I've got some theologian putting on the cover of a book the fact that there is a connection, even an intimate connection, between my sexuality and my spirituality. Well, of course, books like that get read. And so I read and am convinced that James Nelson is quite right. For he says that God created us human beings, sexual persons. It is a book about men, but if you want to have a bestseller these days, you write about the men's movement, you see. But it doesn't have to be about men. It's about men and women. It's about the human situation. And his point is that God created us, men and women, sexual beings. And that our sexuality is the ground that causes us to long to get out of ourselves, to break out of our aloneness, to break out of our isolation, and to be in communion and in union. And then Nelson goes on in a very significant way to say, and that human sexuality which causes us to long for connection is simply a sign of that deeper yearning in us all for communion with God. That there is this insatiable hunger for God, and it finds expression in our hunger for the other. And in our finding the other in intimate connection, in love, why, there is the experience of God. That God is experienced in the relationship in love with another person. Now, James Nelson says, any theology worth its salt has got to be incarnational theology that deals with us as human persons in the totality of our being. And in that incarnational theology, we will recognize that the thing that happened significantly in the Word becoming flesh was not simply that this was a once-for-all event limited to a narrow time band, but it was the instance in which God moved the whole program along to which He would continue to be revealed, continue to be embodied, continue to be enfleshed in humankind. The Word became human. And the Word did not cease to be human. There was the witness of that early community to the Word in flesh, Jesus. And that community gathered around that forming determinative event, became community in which love dwelt. So that John, writing this letter, sometime in the latter part of the first century, had to speak against a group of people who were denying the reality of the incarnation. They are known as Gnostics, which isn't important, but they were influenced by Greek philosophy that denigrated the body and exalted the spirit. It was a kind of esoteric philosophical religious movement that denied that the infinite God could ever be entangled with flesh. And therefore, in this letter, if you go home and read it this noon, you'll find John writing again and again, Jesus, who is a Christian? The one who confesses that Jesus came in the flesh. The humanness of the Word. The tangible concreteness of Jesus in full humanity, that's what John speaks of. But then you can see how John recognized that that wasn't a 30-year event, but it was an ongoing event. Because in that fourth chapter that I read, he begins to talk about God is love. And in this, we know the love of God, and that God gave Jesus, and so forth. And then he says, if God so loved us, we ought to love one another. And the one who loves dwells in God, and God dwells in that one. So that the dwelling of God now is in the concrete humanity of God's people. And that which with which we are created, that longing for another, that longing for intimate connection, is simply a reflection of a deeper longing for God, and that God is experienced not through some intellectual, theological statement about some 2,000-year-old event, but that longing is satisfied when you become God incarnate to me, and I become the flesh of God to you. It is when we are able to break out of our isolation and enter into intimate connection with another that God is present. And in that human relationship, which is horizontal, there is that vertical presence of the God who embraces us in love. It is simply a fact. John simply writes, God is love. And the one who loves dwells in God. And God dwells in the one who loves. Epiphany, manifestation. Experience of God. Not off in some splendid isolation on a mountaintop in a contemplative, mystical experience. Ah, there are a few who can master the art of contemplation to give them some mystical absorption into God. Never been very good at that myself. But for the likes of us ordinary folk, God is as close as the one on our right hand and on our left. And it is in the ordinary humanness of our experience, or the experience of our humanness. If we have epiphany eyes, if we are sensitized to it, it is there that God becomes real. Well, now I'll tell you why I have been unable to complete this sermon. It is because I don't know what to tell you next. Because you see, an ordinary sermon which majors in the tyranny of the ought, the must, and the should would exhort you now to go out and to love one another. But I can talk till I'm blue in the face, and you can try until you're blue in the face, but love is not something of our own conjuring up. Love cannot be coerced, it cannot be forced, it cannot be commanded. The only person who can love like that is a person who has been loved like that. But it's like the chicken and the egg. Where does it begin? Oh, I suppose I could say, let us empty ourselves of ourselves. Let us drain away our bruised egos and our wounded pride and our self-pitying ways. Let us get rid of as much of ourself as we can and open ourselves up, being alert to the possibility of a loving encounter. Let us intentionally give ourselves in loving action. All of that is good, proper, but you know, finally I know that there's no little magic formula I can give you. I simply witnessed to you this morning that the concrete experience of God is in the loving encounter with the other, and that it is in the flesh that embodies the person of the neighbor that God will be found. On Friday, the call came in that Jack Steiginger was taken by ambulance to St. Mary's Hospital. Critical. And the request from the chaplain was there that Jack had asked that I come. And I went. Same old situation. Critical care, St. Mary's Hospital, family gathered, Jack with all kinds of machinery around him and in him. And when I came in the room, the tears just welled up in his eyes.
And with the family gathered, critical. And yet not desperate. Do you know what I mean? There was another presence there. There was something more going on. Jack didn't say, "Come because I know you can answer my question why," or "Come because I know your prayer has some special efficacy." Jack said, "Come because I love Jack. And Jack loves me." And just the week before, he had come down this aisle in his wheelchair with his daughter, giving her in marriage, singing a solo. And I'm glad I could go through rehearsal on Thursday night to get the emotion out of me so I could get through the wedding on Friday night. And now, there we are again, in critical care. But not desperate. Because God is very tangibly and concretely there, and there's just something that one knows, come what may, God with us. Friday night, Nancy and I did a wild, bold, and risky thing. We had our grandchildren sleep over. And Friday night, full of vim, vigor, and vinegar, the night passed and sleep came. Eventually. But I thought Saturday morning I'd get a leg up on today, and so I sneaked up into my loft very early. And then there was a little one in padded bare feet, in a little nightgown with rosebuds and hearts, who came and jumped into my lap, and it was just a little warm ball of flesh. And when she went down to see what Grammy was doing, even her 9-year-old brother, now sleepily awakened, came upstairs and also became a ball of warm flesh, almost too big for me now, but so mellow, so wonderful, so present with God. And Thursday morning at Holland Hospital, I prayed with Wes DeYoung before his surgery, and he took Betty's hand, and I took Betty's hand, and I took his daughter Barbara's hand, and she took his hand, and we had a circle of prayer, and I commended him to God and asked that the mantle of God's grace would rest on him. And when the prayer was over, Wes also, with moistened eyes, said, "You know, we've been through something these past weeks. And I've really discovered, you know, you pray that the mantle of God's grace will rest upon me, but..." And then he pointed to Barbara and to Betty and to me, and he said, "You are God's grace." And God was present there, tangibly and concretely. Because God is not the end of a syllogism or the product of a theological proposition. God is in the warm flesh of the person whom you encounter in love. Take the hand of the person next to you. That's it. If you have eyes to see it and a heart to receive it, that's how near, concrete, tangible, and warm God is. Not in the high heavens or the depths of the earth, but in the face of the other. To love another person is to see the face of God. Thank God.